You're listening to GP Works, the podcast for and about general practice from the Irish College of General Practitioners. I'm Aileen O'Mara, and in this episode, I'm talking to well-known GP, Dr. Noreen Lynine Curtis, who's joining me remotely. From where exactly, Noreen?
I'm in the GTEC Hub in Achill. It was set up here a few years ago, and it's a fantastic facility for anyone wanting to work remotely in Achill. So it's used by lots of different people in lots of different jobs. There's a big main hub, and then there are private offices that people can use for things like telemedicine, where you need a private room for consultations. A fantastic facility here, and it's actually, I think, about 35 of them are in Mayo, and they're all over the country. So they're a great facility.
So telemedicine is a part of your role, but we'll come back to that. Let's go back to the beginning. So tell me about how you became a GP, Noreen.
Well, I suppose I always knew I wanted to do medicine from a very small age. I can remember saying, yeah, I'm going to be a doctor, And I never wavered in that at all. And then when I went to med school, I thought initially I might do surgery. And I did follow that path for a short time. And then I realized I actually really wanted to be a GP and come back to Achill.
And your father was a GP, isn't he?
He was indeed. He's retired now, but I had the privilege of working with him for 17 years. It was absolutely fantastic. And it was a privilege to work with them.
Now, being a GP on an island is very different to being a GP in, for example, South County Dublin, isn't it? Why are you attracted to being a GP there?
Well, I was in the group practice in Achill for almost 20 years, and then I left and became a solo GP for just the islands. So I look after three islands now. I had a third island added recently, Achill Beg, population one. But mainly I look after Clare Island, which has a population of about 130, 140, and Inishbeagle, which has now a population of just 10. So the population is dwindling there. And it is different, obviously, because you're remote from your patients most of the time. So apart from the regular visits out to the islands, most of the medical conditions are managed remotely.
And you have to take a boat, don't you, to see your
patients? Yeah, I do indeed. I go out to Clare Island every week, weather permitting. Occasionally it's not fit to go, and then you just have to manage things from the mainland. But most weeks I would go out to Clare Island, and then I go out to Inishbeagle about once a month.
You must get to know your patients very well, do you?
You do. I have a small number of patients. I'm very lucky in that regard. So yes, I do. I know them very well. And they know me, and we would have a very good working relationship. And also with the nurses on Clare Island, they're absolutely amazing. They're my eyes and ears out there all of the time, 24/7. You know, they live there. There's two resident nurses on Clare Island. We're very lucky. And the patients out there are incredibly lucky to have them. Being an island nurse is totally different to being a PHN or an RGN or a practice nurse. It's some of all of that. And along with that, they're first responders and they're paramedics almost, you know, in their role, because they're the only people on the ground in an emergency and dealing with most things. They have to relay the information to the GP when there isn't a resident GP on the island and deal with whatever they have in front of them. So we work really closely together, and they're absolutely incredible, in my opinion. Couldn't get better.
What about the health services on the island besides the nurses?
It's difficult to get health services onto an offshore island. So there are some visiting health professionals that come out there. So the chiropodist goes out there. We can get a dietitian out there. Physiotherapist can go out there. But it's never easy. You know, it has to be arranged in advance. It's not as often as you'd get it on the mainland. And for some of the services, you can't get them out there, and patients have to travel off the island to the mainland to get those services.
What would you like to see improved?
Well, a lot of things have improved, actually. And last year, a new project was launched out on the island, the Home Health Digital Healthcare Project. It's a pilot project that's been launched on Clare Island, working with Cisco and NUIG. And a lot of technology has been put in place on Clare Island to facilitate better access to healthcare remotely. So an e-health hub was set up on the island. It has really good internet connection, and we can now have patients have consultations with consultants on the mainland without having to leave the island. So whereas before they'd have to down to the harbour, into the boat, over to the mainland, drive for maybe an hour or two to get to a clinic, wait in the clinic for their consultation, then do the whole thing in reverse. Or if they weren't going to make the last boat, they'd have to stay overnight, and sometimes maybe two nights, before going back to the island. So now they can just toddle down to the hub, click on the screen, and there's a consultant in front of them. And we had our first hypertension clinic online there recently, which was fantastic. So another one of the aspects of the project has been giving patients technology to monitor certain parameters remotely, like blood pressure, blood glucose, weight, things like that. And blood pressure in particular, it's uploaded automatically. They all have home blood pressure monitors, and the readings are uploaded automatically. They're being monitored remotely by a doctor on the project. And then if there's aberrations in the numbers, you know, and you can see somebody's blood pressure drifting, you can get in contact with them and say, look, I've been watching the blood pressure. It's gone up the last few days. What's going on with you? Do we need to see you sooner? All of that. And then the consultant can log in and do clinics with them as well. So there a few weeks ago, we had a clinic where we had Lewisburg. The doctor lives in Lewisburg, who's on the project, Jenny. And we had the consultant in Galway, the patient on the island, and myself here in Achill, all linked up together. And we were able to look at all the blood pressure readings over the last 6 months in front of us on the screen, online, discuss them with the patient, discuss their management, make changes where they were necessary. And the patient didn't have to leave the island. So it's a great project.
So that's the e-health hub. So rewind the tape a little bit on that. So where did this start, the e-health hub? And I know you've been involved in it yourself. Where did the idea come from? How long has it taken to get to this point?
I suppose it was being talked about during COVID times or even before COVID. And then COVID probably gave it a boost along, you know, if anything, because all of a sudden we were all doing remote medicine. We were all talking to patients online and on the phone, and it gave it a little bit of a push along. So Cisco are the main partners behind it, and NUIG, Professor Derek O'Keefe's involved there. They're the main partners. And then the HSC have a role in it, Science Foundation Ireland, the health manager, the manager on the island, the island manager. There's a project team manager on living on the island. It started about a year and a half ago now, and it's planned to be expanded now to other islands as well.
So it's really reliant, though, on good internet connectivity, isn't it?
Absolutely. And they have a good connection at the hub. It's fantastic. But the connection in the health clinic on the island, the actual health centre, which is just 100 yards up the road, is not as good. That definitely needs to be addressed. We've been trying to get that sorted, but it hasn't happened yet.
So talk me through the hypertension clinic, because I know a lot of GPs listen to this podcast. Tell me a little bit more about how that hypertension clinic actually works. So, you know, how long it took. You say the patient has to be prepped. Everybody has to be online at the same time. Just go through that for me again, please.
Well, there's a team in place. There's a project manager and there's a facilitator on the island who deals with the setting up the equipment. So the hub is there, the screens are there, the table, desk, chair, everything ready for the patient. And the patients have already been checking their blood pressures at home daily, on a daily basis or twice daily basis. And those results are being automatically updated and uploaded to a remote system that the doctor is looking at. So when we got the patients into the clinic, they just were given a time, come along to the clinic at 11, 11:15, 11:30. And all they had to do was just sit in. It was all set up there in front of them. And we were all on screen, as I said, the consultant in Galway, the doctor on the project, myself and the patient. And we were able to chat to them then about it. We were able to show them their readings, show them what concerns we had, show them if we were happy that it was all normal. They were able to see everything and understand it, obviously, very clearly, and then make any changes that were needed.
What other diseases do you think this could be used for?
Well, it's also being used to monitor blood sugar. So any diabetic patients we have on the island, they're having their blood glucose monitored remotely. And again, that's being uploaded automatically and we're able to keep an eye on it. And then when it drifts, again, we can contact the patient and say, look, your sugar readings have been a bit high in the last week or whatever. Can you come in? We'll have a chat about it or chat online and make any changes that are necessary.
But I suppose nothing really replaces the actual physical consultation between a GP and their patient, does it?
No, nothing does. Nothing does. That'll always be there. It'll always be needed. It will always be important. And I'm very lucky that I have such a small number of patients. They can contact me at any time, really. They all have my number. And because of a small number of patients, they do get to have a same day appointment on the day I go out there. There's never an issue with that. And I think nationally, we need to look at that a little bit more and make sure that all patients can eventually access their GP on the day that they want to have an appointment. More GPs are needed.
Do you envisage, though, that this telemedicine that you're describing, you know, the e-health hubs, they will be rolled out, say, for example, in more parts of rural Ireland where it is difficult at the moment to access GP?
That's the idea. That's the idea, that there would be more of this available so that patients could access care remotely more easily. But it's a little bit more geared towards secondary care. You know, you never want to replace your GP on the ground. You'll always need them. So this is more so maybe patients who maybe, for example, had a hip replacement and they need to have their post-op review. They could have that online. Or if they need to have a consultation, maybe with a physiotherapist or a speech and language or a psychiatry, that could all be, that's very amenable to doing online. So it's a bit more towards secondary management than primary care.
And what about older people? Do you think older people who not necessarily as au fait with technology, do you think that they'd find that quite difficult, or would they always need help with that?
They're absolutely great. I find they're fantastic. Another part of the project is to eventually have little devices in people's homes, kind of like an iPad, where elderly people living alone can have this device. It's connected to a family member on the mainland and the family member can check in on them regularly throughout the day. So you can switch it on, switch it off. You can see, oh, hi, mum, there you are in the kitchen having a cup of tea. How are you getting on? Everything's fine. You know, so that the social interaction is there as well for the elderly living alone. And it has been trialled on the island and the older people love it. They think it's great. So they're well able to manage it, to be honest. They're well able to manage the technology.
And the other part that you talked about, which is key to the success of the program on the island, is the, like you say, the nurses who are living on the island. That's something that's growing in general practice throughout the country, isn't it? The role of practice nurses.
Absolutely, yeah. And the role is huge and can be expanded even further. There's no doubt about that. As I said, the island nurses are a different category, in my opinion, to any other nurse in the country. They're just incredible. And I don't know, they even get enough recognition for what they do. Very often, even in an emergency situation, I will still be in ACL. I won't have gone to the island. You know, if somebody, for example, maybe falls and has an ankle injury, might have a broken ankle, it'll be the nurse on the island that manages that through me. I'll advise, you know, to do this and pain relief and strapping and whatever is needed and organise transport to get the patient off the island. But I'm still here in ACL and it's the nurse on the ground that has done all the work, if you like. You know, even we had a cardiac arrest there some years ago. And I mean, by the time I got out of the island, she had done the CPR, given the shocks, got the patient resuscitated, breathing again. And all that was left for me was to just do a little bit of minding until the helicopter got there to transport him to the hospital. So she had all the hard work done. And the nurses in general are fantastic all around the country for all the practices, and their role could certainly be expanded.
Yes, and I think that's one of the recommendations of the ICGP in relation to dealing with the workforce crisis in Ireland at the moment. Rural general practice, though, I mean, there's a new steering group has been set up on looking at the future of rural general practice. It has its own challenges. Tell me about the steering group. I know you're a member of that.
Yeah, that was just set up this year, late last year. So it's in the very early stages, but it's hoping to promote and develop and support rural general practice in particular in the country. So there are lots of challenges ahead. A lot of work has been done. The number of GP trainees has increased in the country. The number of GPs staying in the country when they qualify is increasing. The number emigrating is dropping. But we still have more work to do to get people to stay in rural general practice, because a large percentage of the population in Ireland does live in rural Ireland. Of the 5 million odd that we have in the country, there's 1.6 living in rural areas, and the number of GPs working in that compared to the number of GPs nationally doesn't match up. I had a look recently there at the number of GMS posts that were available 20 years ago in Mayo, for example, and the number of GMS posts hasn't actually changed in the last 20 years. There are some more GPs working part-time and in sessional work in the county, but the number of GMS posts hasn't changed. So the funding, if you like, coming into general practice hasn't changed a lot, whereas the number of consultants in the county in the same time has trebled. And they're all needed. They're all busy. They're all working hard. But, you know, if you need three times the number of consultants in a county, you need three times the number of GMS posts as well. So I do think that needs to be looked at and increased. And we need to encourage our younger GPs coming out to consider rural general practice, because it's great. It's a great way of life.
You say it's a great way of life, and you know, I'm not disagreeing with you, but would you accept that a lot of GPs coming out now are saying, I don't want to be on call all the time. I don't want to be, you know, doing weekend work. I maybe want to work part-time. I want to combine my career with doing research or teaching, you know what I mean? So like, what do you say to that in relation to being a rural GP? Is that possible?
It is possible. It absolutely is possible. You know, I agree. I don't want to be on call 24/7 either. Let's be honest. Nobody does. I don't think anyone should have to be. But if the proper supports are put in place, you can have a really, really nice life in rural Ireland. It's lovely to wake up in the morning and look out at the sea. It's lovely to know you can leave the house at 9:15 and at 9 o'clock you're in the office having dropped the kids to school. You can fashion your life. You know, through my working life, I would have sort of worked through lunch and then picked up the kids from school at 4 o'clock so that I could spend those couple of hours with them. Just the chat and the doing dinner and homework and being together. One of them says, oh, mom, the surf was great today. Can we go to the beach? Yeah, sure. Grab the boards, towels, off we go. And by 4:30, they're in the water and you're having a lovely walk on the beach. You can do all of that. Whereas in the urban areas, it's not really an option. You're kind of sitting in traffic a lot and you have a longer working day. You know, you don't have that in rural Ireland. You have the beautiful surroundings, the lovely beaches, no traffic congestion. And it's just, it's a nicer way of life, in my opinion. Not for everybody maybe, but in my opinion, it's a lovely way of life. And you can have it with the right supports, but the HSE needs to look at supporting out of hours cover for rural GPs in particular. They need to look at locum cover. So when you come out into a rural practice and you're solo, to try and get a locum for your annual leave or, God forbid, sick leave, maternity leave, whatever you need to take, you're being told, well, okay, you can take your leave, but you're going to have to go and find someone to do the job for you, and you're going to have to pay for 80% of the cost of that. No other job in the country has to do that. You know, teachers or nurses or guards or shop workers, anybody else, they're allowed their leave. They don't have to go and find somebody to do the job while they're absent, and they don't have to pay them while they're absent. You know, their annual leave should be a right, sick leave should be a right, maternity leave should be a right, and should be funded appropriately. And it's not. And in a group practice in a city or an urban area, you have the luxury of being able to share the load. So if one person knocks off, somebody else can take up the slack and work a bit harder. You can share it, you know. But if you're a solo in a rural area, there's no option for that. And that needs an urgent look at. So the newer GPs coming out and the higher numbers and more people staying, that's great. But that's going to take time to trickle on down into rural practice. And if we don't have the appropriate supports in place for them, they're not going to want to come. So that needs to be looked at. So locum cover needs to be looked at. Out of hours needs to be looked at.
And also, I think, as Liam Glynn in University of Limerick has said, you know, one of the studies that they've looked at has shown that if a GP grows up in a rural area, you know, trains become a GP, they're more likely to return to a rural area, aren't they?
That's true. I suppose I'm proof of that, definitely. And yes, once what you can see, you can be. And in UL in particular, I think are very progressive in this area. Their medical students spend 18 weeks in training in general practice, which no other university does at the moment. And they really get a good feel for what general practice is like and what rural practice is like. They go to both rural and urban practices, obviously. But a GP trainee or a medical student spending 8 weeks in a general practice, they get a real feel for it. I remember myself when I did my general practice placement, it was 2 weeks and it wasn't enough. And only that I already knew, I suppose, at some point I'd be heading back here. That 2 weeks wouldn't have inspired me to become a rural GP, to be honest. But spending a longer time in general practice is certainly beneficial. And the studies have shown that more of these GPs, more of these graduates are likely to go into general practice because it's their longest clinical placement. In fact, they spend longer in general practice than they do in any other clinical placement in their time in UL.
But that's the only university doing that, isn't it?
It is at the moment. Yeah, it is at the moment. Hopefully the others will maybe think of following suit. I certainly think it's worth it. I have a group of students myself in the Northwest in rural practices and they're loving it. And they, you know, they all have admitted that they didn't really know what it was like. And they've loved their time in general practice. They've loved the rural practice. It's not for all of them, sure. But for the ones that were considering it, they're considering it even more by the end of the 18 weeks, they're like, oh my God, this is so fantastic. It is a great way of life. It's a great job. I love it. I'll definitely be back. And I can see already some of those students and I know they will be back to rural general practice. And it's wonderful to have been part of that.
Noreen, you're a great advocate for rural general practice and particularly for general practice on the islands, and long may that continue. Thank you so much for your insights into your life on the islands and your work with the eHealth Hub over in the west of Ireland. That's Dr. Noreen Lineen Curtis, who joined us on this episode of GP Works. You have been listening to the podcast from the Irish College of General Practitioners. Remember, we have fresh episodes coming regularly, so do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Aileen O'Mara, and thanks for listening.